Next, on October 26, 2023, by the power vested in me by the Board of Trustees, the Cornell University, I'm calling this meeting to order. Can we get a roll call, please?
For any new members, just let me know if I get your pronunciation wrong, but Divya Akiraju, Amita Akpan, Marwa Bakri, present, Lucia Balastrary, Lizzie Barrett, Issa Tuberi, Franklin Berry,
Present.
Simone Chan,
Present.
Rocco DiLorenzo,
Present.
Zora Daram,
Present.
David Diao,
Present.
Karis Everett,
Present.
Christian Flournoy.
I'm holding his proxy.
Members, please state your name when you say you're holding someone's proxy so they can take that.
David Diao holding Christian Flournoy's proxy.
Ellen Halkowski, Allison Halkowski's friend. Niles Height.
Present.
Cassandra Jordan.
Present.
Sion Kim.
Present.
Clyde Letterman.
I am holding his proxy.
That was Parliamentarian McGard.
Laura Meng.
Present.
Yash Moitra.
Present.
Ezigo Anonye.
Maybe 5 to 10 minutes late.
Suraj Parit. Casey Platkin.
Who's holding his proxy? Agnes Coleman holding his proxy.
Amani Rizeka. Present. Stellar Sun. David Suarez.
Present.
Andrew Talone.
Andrew Talone is no longer a member of the assembly.
Benjamin Terhar. Claire Ting. Adam Vincent.
He's present.
Amy Wang.
Present.
Patrick Keel.
Present. Voting. Okay, we will now read the land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gaigahono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gaigahono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of Gaigahono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gaigahono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. All right. Please take a couple minutes to review the meeting minutes from last meeting. And when someone is ready, please make a motion to approve or amend. Trustee Swenson.
So moved.
What did you say?
So moved.
So moved. There's a motion on the floor to pass the meeting minutes as they stand. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a second on the floor. Is there any dissent to pass the meeting minutes? Seeing none, the meeting minutes are passed. On to the announcement section of our agenda. Vice President of External Affairs, Mr. Parikh.
Hello, everyone. Very exciting news out of the External Communications Committee. Finally, we have created a new Instagram account after we lost access to our old one. So if all of you would kindly follow Cornell_Student Assembly, Hara Shin on the External Communications Committee put this together. So thank you to her for doing all this. Yeah, there is a post on there. So if you guys would kindly like repost, promote the account so that way we can get people knowing that we are active on Instagram and we can get the word out.
Trustee Swenson, do you have a point of motion? Point of inquiry.
Thank you, Vice President Parikh. Can you provide some updates regarding the Instagram account? Is there going to be like a set timeline for posting? You know, is it going to be once a week, twice a week? What's the engagement going to look like? And then talking about the bulletin boards within each of the schools or in high traffic areas for the student assembly, you know, have we made any progress on that? And then have we made any progress on connecting to all the TVs around the school to make sure we can adequately inform the community of what is going on within student assembly?
Yeah, so on the bulletin boards and the TVs, President Kuhl can answer that better than I can. In terms of the Instagram, right now we are set to have probably one more post this week. And I would invite any members of the assembly who wish to, you know, get something on the Instagram page. If you have any initiatives, any particular information you want to put out there, please contact either myself or Hera or the External Communications Committee through Slack. We're currently talking through like ways to increase engagement, things like collaborating with other institutional accounts, getting members to, you know, take over the account or have posts on there. But we'd also welcome your suggestions if you have any about how we could increase reach.
The bulletin boards are being finalized. We have space reserved. We're waiting on our Canva Pro subscription to format them to the correct size for the bulletin boards. I have a meeting with IT next week about TVs. Vice President De Lorenzo.
Awesome. Well, announcements for me. The Appropriations Committee will be meeting this Sunday from 11 to 3 p.m. in Upson Hall 146. And we'll be meeting with the orientation, byline organization, SAFC, and the Student Assembly byline organization.
What are they bringing?
Cornell_Student Assembly.
Yes.
Lovely. Any other announcements on the floor? Seeing none, we'll move on to community microphone. The chair will now recognize any community member who wishes to speak. Each community member may speak for 2 minutes. Is there any interest? You're welcome to speak at this time.
Hi, Student Assembly. My name is Manak Muhashim. I am a member of Students for Justice and Peace, and me and about 40 other students have gotten doxxed online. I know you guys are voting on a doxing bill today, and I want to say there's full support of it. I think it's very important during this time. The entire, like, I've been going to healing moments for, like, what's happening, et cetera, and the leader of the Muslim community is telling us to be silent so that we don't get doxxed. Like, there's such a huge fear of being put on the internet and having repercussions. And this is something that has happened so many times here at Cornell, and administration has done nothing. And there's been instances where students have been getting death threats for this. And I think that that is completely unacceptable, especially when we have a theme or expression, whatever, freedom of expression. In order for there to be a freedom of expression theme, there needs to be an area that is open for freedom of expression. So I want to say that this document or this resolution, whatever, is very important, and I hope that it passes, excuse me, especially as a member of the Arab community, a member of the Muslim community. A lot of us are very scared. A lot of us are worried about voicing anything, and I feel like this applies to multiple different communities, and I feel like it's good to protect everyone, so I really don't see a reason why you wouldn't pass it. But I just wanted to emphasize how big of an issue it is within so many different communities today. And I have, like, I'm Palestinian, so my family literally tells me not to say anything out of fear of being doxxed. That's how important it is. I've already gotten docs and they still don't want me to say anything just because of how big of an issue it is of like speaking for Palestine or like me going out and speaking about what's happening to my family, and people get mad and put me on the internet. So I feel like that shouldn't be acceptable. And I feel like students should be held accountable, especially when we know who the students are that are doxing us.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Any other community members at this time? If you're here for the program and council appeal, there will be a separate section for that, if that's what you're looking for. Okay. We will now move on to the report section if there are no further community members wishing to speak. Seeing none, we'll be moving on to reports. I will start. Been working on a lot of stuff. Had a wonderful APSCOM meeting this last weekend. That was good to be there. Working on IT stuff. There are a lot of interesting projects to get involved in, and I've got kind of my hands in all of them. So definitely when you hear from other officers and you hear something that sounds interesting, don't be afraid to get involved. There's a lot of opportunity for involvement and a lot of things that still need changing. So Executive Vice President Ting.
Thank you so much. So this morning I had the opportunity to speak with members of the assembly leadership. And as the concern that our community member brought up, doxing is still very much so on the table. This is a pertinent resolution that we will be seeing on the resolutions calendar today. If anyone is interested in continuing this advocating to deter and prevent doxing and promoting student safety, please get in touch with Vice President of DEI, Issa Tu Berry, or myself. That being said, final announcement is that just wanted to promote once again, the Coalition Against Sexual Violence meeting will be on November 17th. Very relevant to anyone who's interested in shaping the future of how campus prevention sexual assault training might look for first year students. And if you have any interest in that at all, I encourage you to attend. Thank you.
Thank you. Vice President for Finance, De Lorenzo.
Yes, updates for me or reports. The Appropriations Committee is appropriating money. Been very busy with that, and we'll get to the Programming Council report when we get to it.
Vice President for XCOMS, Mr. Breek.
Yes, we're working on a couple of different initiatives. We talked about the Instagram. Boards are also happening. We are having weekly discussions at 7 p.m. on Wednesdays about just how we can increase SA engagement and like overall outreach to the student body. So if you're interested, definitely come to those meetings.
Vice President DEI, Barry.
All right, so the... So the DEI committee we met yesterday, we'll be meeting again next week, Wednesday, the November 1st, 6 to 7 p.m. in Willard Strait Hall, room 413. Hope to see you all there. There's some resolutions that I'll be passing through the ethics committee. Additionally, some initiatives we could work on, like getting free laundry for students, food insecurity on campus, as well as the sexual awareness and education.
Lovely. Any other reports from anybody on the floor? Seeing none, we're going to skip committees and liaisons today as we have a very busy schedule. We will now move on to presentations. Director Bangura and the Office of Ethics. Director Bangura, you're recognized.
I move to place the Vice President of Finance Byline Report to the top of the presentations agenda by unanimous consent.
There is a motion on the floor. Is there a second? There's a second. Is there any dissent to moving the Vice President of Finance presentations before the Office of Ethics? Seeing none, Vice President DeLorenzo. Your speaking time for this resolution or for this presentation will be 10 minutes.
10 minutes. Okay. All right. Well, I will speed right through this. So basically, this past weekend, we met with the Programming Council, and the Programming Council is this new sort of organization that's a bundle of all of current organizations that are all bylines. So these organizations underneath them are the Cornell Concert Commission, Cornell University Class Councils and Senior Days, Cornell University Program Board, Senior Convocation Committee, Slope Day Programming Board, Student Union Board, and the Multicultural Community Fueled Activities Board. So basically, in the current state, I think this is important to state right now, in the charter, we list this as the Programming Council. But if you guys notice, there is the Student Programming Council. And so the way to think about this is that because all of these organizations will still have separate account and money, the only difference is that now under the Programming Council arm of it, right, that's like the shell of it. They're allowed to transfer money in with some stipulations and those that would be required. But basically, like in this model, the Student Programming Council is the thing that underscores all of it, all of them. And they're mainly there as the overhead and connecting all the orgs. If you guys turn to page 2, we can see all the different allocations based on their allocation from previous year, the requests, and then the Appropriations Committee recommendation. And I would highlight in here that as part of this, like part of the Programming Council, is that they would be able to share financial resources with each other in the event that they do need them. And so in seeing that, at least in Student Assembly, we don't want, you know, we want to bring organizations closer to the Student Assembly. Basically, in addition to the separate bank accounts, like we talked about before, the Appropriations Committee recommends that any transfers of money directly from one organization account into another organization's account less than $1,000 can be automatically transferred by the Programming Council. And transfers of money between $1,001 and $10,000 need to be approved by the Student Assembly Executive Committee. And any transfers of money greater than $10,001 need to be approved by the Student Assembly at large. So then the remainder of this report kind of goes organization by organization. Technically the new one would be the Student Programming Council, which is the thing that underscores all of those organizations. And there's a difference between, like we said, the Programming Council and the Student Programming Council before. So the Student Programming Council, their allocation was voted to be $3. And the way that this budget's going to be split up, I believe 22% will be allocated to the professional development of Student Programming Council members. 44.44% will be allocated to SPC-specific programming events, and 33.33% will be allocated to a reserve fund to which individual SPC organizations can request access from. Okay, next organization. So now getting into the actual organizations that are being merged, we have the Cornell Concert Commission. So basically, the Cornell Concert Commission, they host about 6 shows a year, with one of them being the return to the semester show, and then they do a homecoming show and like a collab with a different organization. And I believe there's one more they do in the spring as well, to basically make it 3 per semester. I think two of the 6, I could be wrong, but 2 of the 6 are free shows. And then the other ones are ticketed based on, you know, the artists that they get and the scale of it. Basically, story of this is that during COVID, you couldn't have like massive concerts here at Cornell with all the restrictions. So the account balance kind of grew a little bit over time. And so throughout the past 2 years, they've basically been spending down that rollover balance. In the event that, and you know, I would say this applies to all large scale programming organizations, you can pretty much justify any increase in money just by saying you want to bring a bigger artist, a bigger speaker to campus, right? And we think it's important to honor that, but at the same time, we want them to have the operational scale to execute that. So that really, you know, that applies to all of these speaker, large event programming orgs. So Cornell Concert Commission, with the rate the artist prices have been going up, we felt it necessary to at least honor up to what they were requesting, with the stipulation that one of those collab shows happens in April, and it's with McFab. And so because McFab is new and they do the shared programming between them to help assist with the show, we basically decreased the Cornell Concert Commission allocation proportional to the increase to McFab. which would then allow them to go out and plan the show and really have reins over that show, but with the expectation that the Cornell Counselor Commission would also help out and assist with them, because that's the goal of the program council. So in the end, the Student Assembly voted to allocate $22 to Cornell Counselor Commission. Okay, so McFab, if you guys can look at the top of the McFab thing, you'll see like a little asterisk. McFab was technically under Alana before, and they were receiving the equivalent of $4 per student per year from Alana. And so when they were pulled out to the programming council, the Alana baseline allocation basically for this cycle, it decreased proportional to that. So they technically didn't get any money last cycle, but it would have been proportional to $4. They want to go from $4 to $15. And so in looking at this and looking at the report that they submitted to us, their expenses really only total to around, I believe, $7.10 per student per year based on the projected enrollment numbers. But with the different switch that we did with CCC, we increased that $7.10 allocation proportional. And then we also basically cover the rest to cover, different expenses and stuff. And so that $15 allocation was made, or that request that was made, with the expectation that there would be 15,000 undergrads paying the fee, but enrollment is expected to increase. So when you do the number, it comes out to around 1475. That is McFab. Now on to Cornell University Program Board. So CUPB, they do programming with like speaker events, comedians, having them come in. I think it's great this year. They're planning on doing some events themed around this year's theme year of the indispensable condition, freedom of expression at Cornell. I think it's good that the organizations are engaging with that. So CUPB, sort of similar situation where they had somewhat of a rollover kind of come up through COVID. They were able to have some speaker events, comedians on Zoom, which still costs basically the same amount of money because artist prices just kept going up and up and up. But basically they want to go from 1356 to, I think the initial thing was 18, but then when we recalculated with the math, it went, 15,500 undergrads, it went down to 1774. And then the appropriations committee voted to allocate them $17 of that. So next organization, convocation. So convocation, they do the end of year events and sort of run up to convocation for the seniors, and it's a big deal, it's a big event, and so over basically the past, since COVID, with the increasing enrollment balance, increase to artists booking fees, stuff like that, convocation over time, they've definitely held on to a lot of that built up rollover account money. And so in looking at that, basically, I think I did the math in here, but basically convocation had a beginning balance before their annual allocation of approximately 107.78% of their annual allocation for this year. So it's essentially equivalent to how much money they're getting right now from their allocation was already locked up in their reserve account. So in looking at this request to go from 18 to 22, the Appropriations Committee felt that with the rate that the activity fee is set on track to increase for this year, we would want to see organizations use some of that rollover money and sort of whittle it down. And even with an allocation of $18, right, based on expected expenses over the next two years, convocation would still be in a good spot as an organization. They would definitely have enough money to coast them through. That is convocation. So next was Slope Day. So Slope Day Programming Board, obviously in spring 22 and spring 23, we did not have the physical Slope Day. We did have virtual Slope Days, which were, it was fun. I tuned in when I just got admitted to Cornell. I tuned into that spring's Slope Day Zoom. Basically Slope Day has been, I would say, out of all these orgs, most hit severely financially by the increase in artist prices, just because it's so hard to keep up. In addition to that, to just host the Slope Day event, it costs a significant amount of money. And so really, when their allocation didn't go up in fall 21, yes, they had somewhat of that fixed cost rollover from those virtual Slope Day years, but that can only take them so far. And so in last year's Slope Day, the Slope Day Programming Board really did their best effort in terms of making sure that we could still have Slope Day, and other organizations pitched in to help. But we could, it was definitely noticeable how much, you know, financial struggles that we're going through. So in looking at this, their allocation for this year would have been the exact same at $21 per student per year. And so this is when the student assembly helped to step in and toss them $400,000 for this year's slope day. So breaking down the cost of that for this year, we can see this nice chart that was in the slope day survey. Oh, also take the slope day survey if you guys haven't already. But yeah, so in this current cycle right now, if we were to divide 715,000 by 15,500, the allocation would come out to around 46, 45, somewhere in there, dollars per student per year. And so in expecting that, you know, when you get bigger artists and you get these bigger talents, their fees are already going to go up as it is, but your fixed costs of security and fencing and everything else that goes into Slope Day is also going to increase. And so out of all the organizations really Slope Day, it's so, so important for them to not be in financial struggles in order for them to execute, because it's one event per year at the very end of the year, right? And so this is where we kind of felt that a allocation of $50 per student per year would be justified, just to ensure that something like that wouldn't happen again, and they would have enough money to do everything that they wanted to do. I would say notable exception with the programming council is that because Slope Day is at the end of the year, it's so important for them to have the money to go out and execute on Slope Day. And so unlike other programming council orgs who can transfer money in and out of their accounts, only money can be transferred into the Slope Day account. Money cannot be transferred out. But that was an appropriations committee recommendation, and we'll have to solidify all that in the charter when we update it. Next organization is Student Union Board. So the Willard Straight Hall Student Union Board, they do a whole bunch of different programming events celebrating Willard Straight Hall. And, you know, throughout the COVID years, they were good about having some events, and they did have somewhat of a rollover, but it really wasn't as significant as some of the other organizations. So, you know, I'd say operationally, Willard Straight Hall Union Board operates extremely well, and they have very, very committed members to help them go out and plan and do different events here at Willard Straight Hall. And they host very frequent number of events. It's a lot of events. And so I think the Cornell community really appreciates that. In terms of their plans coming up, they have been facing some, you know, somewhat financial difficulties because they're one of the smaller programming orgs who gives away some items at some of their events. And so with cost of goods going up, they want to still be able to have that amount of money to go and plan events. And so the appropriations committee voted to honor the request of $6.60 from $3.30. In the end,
1 minute, 30 seconds.
Okay. Basically, in the end, Willard Straight Hall Union Board, we're going to set them up for success. And we also are looking forward to the Willard Straight Hall 100th year anniversary, fall 25. It's been almost 100 years of this building. The final award would be class councils and senior days. So basically, the split here is that class councils exist to, you know, bring the classes together over the class years. And then senior days is all the programming leading up to convocation and graduation in the spring for seniors. So in the split of the amount of money, a significant amount goes to senior days over class councils. I think the rough estimate is about 20% of 1645, their request would go to class councils, or 20% of 1645 would go to class councils, and then the 80% would go to senior days. So in this sort of model, right, class councils, they do host events throughout the year, but, you know, a lot of the money is spent on the senior day activities. In the end, basically, between these two orgs, they used to be at $7.40 when they merged together. And so now that they're basically together in this one byline organization, the amount, once you did the math, added up to around $16.45. And so with this, you know, pretty big increase, the appropriations committee felt that an allocation of $16 would be justified in terms of both class councils and senior days. That's only like a small little decrease of their allocation, and it helps to round out the numbers in the very end. But I guess with that, I can take questions. I'm very surprised I finished that in a timely manner. But it was a lot of work to write this report. I'm really glad that this direction the programming council is moving in. And yeah, I'll take questions right now. Come on, I wrote 19 pages and no one has any questions.
Representative Barry.
Point of inquiry. I was just wanted to ask, from the two meetings I've been to so far, we've raised funding in multiple different committees, organizations, and we decreased funding in one. I was just wondering, are we able to increase spending because we didn't spend a lot during the COVID years, or are we taking money away from something else?
Yeah. So to answer this question, basically, we set the fee, like we can print as much money as possible because this is all coming up in the future, right? So it's money that has not been charged yet. So when you get your Cornell Bursar bill, right, you see like tuition, room and board, and then student activity fee is a lot. The way that we decide this is we meet with all the orgs, find out what they need, and then add up all those numbers in the end. For the bigger picture, where the fee is at currently, where it's going to go, basically, the fee is currently set in 2019 for the 2020 and 2022 school year. It was set at $309. Some of that was decreased over time because of COVID and money moving back and forth. But when it was set in fall 21 for last academic year and this academic year, it was set at $310. And so that $1 increase, to be honest, it was not enough to carry these orgs through the rapid inflation that we would see persist in the next few years. And you also have to remember that, well, if we took $310 and multiplied it out with CPI and stuff, at this current time, that amount of money would be like $357, $360, right? But that's assuming the normal CPI basket of goods. We have stuff in our basket that is just experiencing basically double the amount of money it was before, like the artists and speaker costs. And so really the fee, if we were to backtrack it back to then and really see where the inflation was coming from, right, we would be somewhere around $380, $390. And so while it does look like a large increase, a lot of this is justified behind those things in order to make sure that these organizations can still have their events. And we're basically on track to end up somewhere in that range in the long run, somewhere around there. But yeah, so I hope that helped answer the question. This isn't, we're not just like, I think you're thinking of the Slope Day money, which is pulled out of a reserve account in one of the organizations. So, yeah.
Representative Dio.
Point of information. I just wanted to clarify the relationship between the Senior Convocation Committee's role in Senior Days as well as the Class Council and Senior Days Fund. So currently, it seems that the issue with Senior Days is attendance capacity for events. But flipping back, for the Senior Convocation Committee, it lists within the end of the second paragraph that the Convocation Committee also supports Senior Days through collaborative events and giveaways. I'm just wondering, is this capacity, like, are they also facing similar issues in terms of resource allocation for events? I just kind of want to know a little bit more about what that means for Senior Convocation Committee.
Yes, yeah. So for pretty much all these organizations, with the exception of the first two block reports, all of the organizations already exist. To start it off, for context of what the organization does, I just pulled their mission and greatest contribution to the student sector. That came right from their submitted reports. A lot of that stuff is already online. It's just more formalized in paragraph setting. I guess, you know, to answer that, Senior Days can collaborate with Convocation, but you have to remember the Convocation is one event. Pretty much the majority of the money gets spent there. They do help out with a 100-day rollout to Convocation and graduation, stuff like that. But really, Convocation is planning one large-scale event, and the Senior Days events are like all these events throughout the end of classes, you know, after Slope Day in that time period, and then leading up to graduation. And there are a lot of, you know, different trips and events that seniors can sign up and register on. A lot of those events are break even, which is basically like once they determine the quantity of people that want to go, right, they set the price to kind of equal that. They set the, you know, the capacity of who can go on these trips and different experiences within Ithaca at that level. But yeah, I think there is some collaboration there. I'm not entirely sure, but you know, I would guess there is.
Thank you.
Ex officio Courtney.
Very well written, very well spoken, as per the usual. My question is, these numbers get reviewed every 2 years, mm-hmm. and the net direction is upward. Do you see projections looking 6 to 10 years forward where there's a potential that we run into an issue where students are going, this increases a lot. And do we have any, I'm just curious if you have any thoughts on that, any plans for the future? We probably won't be here, but somebody will.
Yeah. So I definitely think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that even if we go back to last year, right, we had four organizations that sat there and planned concerts all separately. And what they still do right now, I think we can solve a lot of those costs in terms of, you know, throwing the event by having this student programming council. I think a lot of the parts that they highlighted in their presentation was the fact of this shared calendar and shared marketing where everything is in one place. There's not, eight different Instagram accounts. This is the programming council schedule for this week. They're having programs pretty much nearly every day for the entire semester, right? And that will really help drive attendance there. And then again, for those concerts and organization type things, then, if they charge ticket prices, the ticket prices can be lowered proportionally, or they can keep them the same and not worry about that cost cutting. I think in the long run, right, you have to remember we are a university in the middle of nowhere that has 15,000 undergrad students. And another point that is always made here at Cornell is if you want to do a club, you can just start a club, right? We have so many clubs and student organizations that every time one is created, right, a lot of that work is within SAFC and Club Sports Council and Interfaith, right? But these are the big drivers, right? These are the ones that consistently do programming all the time. These are, really, really core organizations, right? In terms of student programming and student enjoyment here in Ithaca. I think, we talked about in the middle of nowhere, it just costs a lot of money to get stuff here, right? From shipping to the artists to the booking, right? I mean, like you go to a hotel and like you're staying in the middle of nowhere in Ithaca, New York, and it's like, $350, $400 for a room for a night, right? It's like you drive 30 minutes north to like Cortland and you're just not getting that same level. So, I think yes, the student activity fee is going up, but we also have to look at the programming and value that's offered to all students here at Cornell at the same time.
Yash Moitra, 1 minute speaking times.
You've talked about basically allowing funds under transfers under $10,000 between clubs to go directly, right? Are you concerned as to how the unregulated structure of some of these clubs that handle large amounts of money might allow for quid pro quos to set in wherein transfers take place, monetary transfers take place of large values that may be connected to unethical practices between the leaders of these clubs?
Yeah. So I think just for context, that is a very valid question. I think you're sort of getting a little confused with the organizations that we are currently allocating money for. So we only do the byline reports and stuff for around, a little less than 30 organizations. All of those other sub clubs that you're thinking about, like maybe the pre-professional ones, all of those ones are beneath either SAFC, Club Sports Council, or Interfaith Council. I think in the end, right, if we're talking about saying, all right, student assembly exec can approve up to basically $10,000 worth of transfer funding, if everyone could really quickly just multiply 147.35 times 15,500, I mean, we're basically talking about a sum of money that's like $2.283 million, right? And so it's like, yes, in the grand scheme of things, like, up to $10,000 in transfer funds, that I would expect occur somewhat, right? Like not very, very frequently, but I think in the grand scheme of things, it's not, proportional to how much money it actually is.
Representative Rizka.
Yeah, so I guess my concern, is that like this is going to be like an almost $70 increase from like its previous allocation, and like the other byline orgs that we've reviewed have all for the most part have increased their budget allocations as well. And so like I'm just curious as to like how much the student activities fee is going to like increase for students, especially students who are low income, because like right now it's kind of feeling like at least $100,
Yeah, totally valid concerns there. So I think just starting off, if you receive financial aid from Cornell, right, your student activity fee is gone, right? And so I think that in the grand scheme of things, if we look at this increase right now, we say $80 to 147, what we're really missing in here is this hidden bump of where the last cycle should have ended up, right? And I think a lot, like, you know, we use the same justifications with some of the orgs that we reviewed so far, which is basically like, listen, if you have a large rollover balance, we want you to spend that money down, right? And when they spend it down, expected it in the next cycle, we could somewhat match that, right? And so in the last cycle, they were coming right out of COVID. A lot of organizations had really, really large rollover account balances. And at the same time, we didn't know the rate of inflation that would come out, right? Because that didn't really start kicking up until fall of, you know, spring of 2022 and then the end of fall 21. And so really, like, if we actually evaluate this fee where it should have been before, right, I would gander to say it should have been around 110, 120, somewhere in there. And so now we're just basically catching it up to the amount of progress. And I think in addition to that, right, a lot of this increase is driven by the fact that these organizations have worked extremely hard over the past 2 years to maintain the level of programming to Cornell students, you know, that they can go and attend their events, right? If, for example, Cornell Concert Commission just didn't give them their increase, they would likely have to like cut a show or something like that. And so it's, you know, I think it's fair to them. It's fair to us. And you know, just the rate of inflation, we just, you know, fees got to go up.
Trustee Swenson, 1 minute.
All right. Thank you so much, Patrick. Rocco, thank you very much for all the hard work you put into appropriating all this money and all the time you put into writing these reports. However, I think if you're not like a finance nerd or, you know, you're not super invested in the jargon, you're going to have a hard time understanding the nitty gritty details of what you're actually accomplishing. And what a majority of the people on the student assembly are realizing is that the student activity fee, according to the appropriations committee, is going up, which for people from, you know, marginalized communities and people who are on financial aid, that is bad. So it's like money goes up, that's bad. So like, I think we come to understanding. So Rock, can you provide some more procedural overview of what we're actually voting on specifically and what the power of the appropriations committee actually has in designating the new student activity fee, given the fact that, you know, I think Martha has to approve it too. So can you just provide the student assembly with some overview of the structure in very plain language?
I would love to, JP. So basically, once we make it through all these organizations, which is set to be around mid-March, I believe, or November 12th, at that meeting, we will compile all of this. It will be a full report, right? And it's going to be all the single bylines with their justifications and then overall justification for the increase. Once I present that, we can't vote on it that meeting. We have to vote on it at the last meeting of the year, which is, I believe, November 30th. And then once we vote on that, and if it passes, then it goes to Martha. I think there's been a misconception in the past that Martha has shot down a fee. We've charged our historian with like going through and like looking to see like where that happened, when that happened. And we still have not been able to find realistically when that happened. I think that in terms of, yes, the fee is increasing, but ask the question, how much did the Cornell tuition increase in the past 2 years, right? A lot of money, right? And so it's like, if the fee's not going to go up to match that and match the enrollment capacity of these organizations, it's doing a disservice to the leadership of those organizations who work hard to go and plan those events. And I think, you know, in the end, this increase is going to be marginal and you can easily recoup your invested money in the student activity scheme by going to these different events.
A couple of points I just want to add real quick. First of all, as Rocco mentioned, anybody on financial aid, no matter how much financial aid, the student activity fee is covered. Second of all, especially for organizations to do programming, if programming organizations don't have enough money to put on their events, the other way they make money is by raising ticket prices, which does directly affect anybody who wants to attend. So I think it's kind of like you need to figure out where this money is coming from one way or the other. So Representative Rezica, do you, Representative Jordan, you're next on the docket as Representative Rezica has already spoken. You can go now.
I had a quick question. This looks great. For the MIFAB allocation, it says they requested $15, but on the last paragraph, it says that they requested $7.10. I was just wondering for some clarification on the requested amount.
Yeah. So the way that a lot of, and this was partially a fumble on my part, right, is that in the initial allocation, there was no request for dollars per year per student, right? And because they can't just submit a total sum of money and say, meet this amount of money, right? It's because we don't know how many students are going to be enrolled in the next 2 years. The enrollment projections that I've received have come from like a pretty reputable source, right? And so if they gave us a total sum of money that amounted to, let's just say, for example, $100,000, right? And then we could backtrace that in with the expected enrollment of 15,500. We could figure out the dollars per student per year, right? And that's how we add the fee to figure out what they'll actually charge. So in terms of McFab, initially, right, that total dollar sum amount that they had submitted was less than what was presented in the actual appropriations committee meeting. Once we basically figured out that a portion of the money goes to help that April show, right, that they do in collab with CCC. And so when we divided that sum of money by, you know, 15,500, then we ended up with that $7.10 number. Then we added on the increase from CCC, and then we evaluated that request of the new dollar amount total that they had, which came out to around $14.75. And so we increased it from there to match that.
That's time. Representative Wong.
Can I motion to end the presentation?
You can motion to end the presentation. The motion on the floor is to end the presentation. Is there a second?
What? Is that? Also, can I motion to move Resolution 33 before Resolution 30?
We have to finish this question item in question first, but after that, then you can. The motion on the floor is to close debate on this, and then we will go into the appeals process.
Then the appeals.
The motion on the floor is to close debate. Is there a second?
Second.
There's a second on the floor. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, we'll move into the appeals process. We will, just because this is a complex set of organizations, we're going to go down the list. Class councils and senior days. If you're here and would like to appeal, please take your place at the table. Class councils and senior days, you will have 2 minutes, and then Rocco, you will have 2 minutes to respond.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much to the Appropriations Committee for giving us the money. We're very, very grateful for the $16. However, we were wondering if it would be possible to get closer to $16.45, just because even though it may seem like only 45 cents, it does make quite a big of a difference for our specific events, because you have to consider that we, like Class Councils itself, operates on a much smaller budget than Senior Days. But generally, I think that the 45 cents increase would really help us over the 2 years, and it'd make a very big difference specifically for our individual council events. And the number we're asking for is very, very specific.
That's it. Lovely. Vice President De La Renzo, you have 2 minutes to respond.
Perfect. So basically in evaluating this amount of money, as we talked about before, around 20% of it goes to class councils, then the other 80% goes to senior days. So if people want to do the math right now, you multiply 16.45 by 20 cents to figure out class councils' dollar amount. In terms of the decrease to 45 cents, assuming that that is spread evenly between senior days and class councils wouldn't be necessarily as hard hit as people would think. And so in doing the math, if we expect an allocation of basically it came out to a little less than $3 in terms of class council's amount of money, then you multiply that 45 cent decrease by 20%, you end up with around 7.8 cents per student per year. And then in comparison to the overall budget, right, even a hit to both senior days and class councils, that would really take the class council's budget down from $44,950 to $43,720 and change, right? So that is only a decrease of around $1,280-something in the end. And so it's kind of like, I think it's all proportional to the scale. If we decrease that percentage by that, it's only around a 2% budget cut. And I think a lot of those cost synergies can be optimized within the programming council overall, right? And using that structure to rely on that. But you know, I think it's just a matter of like, you know, we increased a lot of these organizations, a lot of money. You went from $740 to $16 in terms of the two of them. And it's kind of like, you know, I feel like we did a good job with this, but yeah, I don't know. I'll take questions.
All right. We will now go to discussion on class councils. If you have a question, please direct it at either Vice President DeLorenzo or class councils. Representative Barry.
For class councils, like, so you've come to this, you said you've come to this specific number of 45 cents. Is there like a specific part of your meetings or a specific thing you're looking to use the money for instead of just saying that it gives you more specific room for the meetings? Like, what is the 45 cents for?
Basically, we have a specific amount for each council and the total council. And because we're trying to increase the amount that each council can spend on their collective, you know, individual council events, that's what the extra about 1200 would go towards. So it's not about like a general thing. It's more about, we want to make sure that everyone can have a specific amount to run their events to the most optimal it can be.
I'm allowed to add.
Yeah, you can respond.
Basically, yeah. So if, you know, there's mainly three class councils, right? And across the years, four. Yeah. So four divided by 1200 is only $300. And so it's kind of like, you know, I don't really know. It's like, maybe you just forego one of the seven or eight stickers that you guys buy throughout the year. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's obviously up to the will of the assembly, but, you know, I feel like a lot of the increases that we've shown have been justified and very, very thorough. We spent a lot of time with it, spent a lot of time looking through the financials behind it. I really know that. I feel like it's like, again, we talk about like any increase in money can be justified with, we want to do more programming, you know, but yeah, I think, you know, either way, class councils is in a good state as an organization, right? They have a very committed board, especially in the lower years of sophomore freshman year.
Other representatives.
Can I motion to end debate and vote on the recommendation?
So we're going to do each sub organization first and then vote on the total. And if it gets denied, if the total gets denied, then we will run through each item, line item. That makes sense to everybody. Any questions on that? Okay. Senior Convocation Committee. Is there a representative of Senior Convocation Committee here? Seeing none. Cornell Concert Commission. Seeing none. Oh. Two minutes each.
Hello, everyone. My name is Vincent. I'm here representing the Cornell Concert Commission. In voting on this resolution, I'd just like to drive home the importance of getting our allocation increased. I'd also like to speak to the stipulation about there being required approval from the student assembly for fund transfers. All of the organizations joining the programming council did so it'd be easier to transfer funds between us. And as organizations that are divisions of student activities, our advisors are pretty involved in the transferring of our funds. So there wouldn't be room for there to be any foul play among students having that. We have operated in the past with freedom to transfer money between each other, and we think it'd be a little bit redundant to enforce that stipulation. Thank you.
To this respond.
So I guess just to start off, no byline organization up until the formation of the programming council, which hasn't actually been voted on yet, is allowed to transfer money in between that organization and another organization's byline account. It's just that this stuff has been going on. No one has really informed us about transfers, and we kind of find out over time, right? And so our goal right now is to bring in the programming council and affiliated organizations more into the student assembly, right? And really get your input on some of the stuff that we vote on, and really have representation that way. I would say that in terms of the transfers of money, right, it's the programming council, right? In order to do these large-scale programming events that would require 10K plus amount of money, right, to transfer between the orgs, you have to do a lot, right? And so it's kind of like, if you're going to do the planning and you want to say to yourselves, okay, well, we want to do this, this, and this, right? It's important to have that plan to go out and execute well in advance. And that will help, you know, the transfer money over time, right? That's what I'd say to that. I know a lot of exec board members kind of feel the same way in terms of the, you know, bringing in the orgs closer to the student assembly, and then also sort of, you know, letting us know what's going on, right? I think that for a major part of it, right, over the past few years, there have been times where we don't know if these organizations are in financial distress because no one's ever told us, and to inform us, someone's kept us in the loop. And so I think that that's sort of the targeted goal of this change.
Questions on the floor. Representative Rezica.
Motion to end debate.
There's a second. Is there any dissent to ending debate? Okay. That passes. Thank you, CCC. CUPB. Okay. Slope day. Okay. Student union. McFab. Student programming council. You can pull up another chair too. All right, decorum delegates, let's lock in.
Like time for this that we have to speak in.
What did you say?
Do we have a certain time we have to speak in? Like, is it
you
like,
have 2 minutes. 2 minutes.
Hi, everyone. Just wanted to thank you again for meeting with us on Sunday to discuss like the budgeting pieces. We really appreciate your time and we appreciate how much money you gave us. We are very happy with the allocations. But we wanted to talk a little bit more about a specific stipulation in the report that we got, specifically about how, as CCC talked about earlier, there is sort of like a vote that is required for transfers of funds that are greater than $1,000. I'll let my VP of Finance.
Hello, everyone. Just to make sure you guys all are aware, basically, if we have a transfer of money between like a little bit more than 1,000 and 10,000, we have to get it approved by the exec community. And anything above 10,000 needs to be approved by all of you. And obviously, this isn't really ideal for SPC because a big part of our mission is about, you know, having our autonomy of not only the student groups, because they are still in charge of all their finances. Like, we're not taking away any money for them, but it's more about to make sure that we have the smoother collaboration, that this certain number that you guys are asking for isn't ideal.
Just adding on to that, I just want to like make it clear that we're respectful of the fact that you allocated a certain amount for each organization. We believe that that amount should like generally be kept within each organization. With that being said, as Nafisa said earlier, part of the like, point of this programming council is that we're able to allocate funds as we see fit, considering the fact that also we do have a lot of programming experience and we understand how this money can be best spent. Considering we also have G-body meetings in which we meet with representatives from each organization and we talk through all of this together.
Additionally, for any transfers to happen between orgs, both orgs as well as SPC's G-body need to come into agreement, and assuming that the liaison from Student Assembly would be participating, Student Assembly would be made aware. It's just for every single transfer that's between this amount isn't ideal because we are working with a big amount of money. And to consider that, I don't think that between 1,000 to 10,000 is a reasonable range.
That's time. De Lorenzo, 2 minutes.
Yeah. So thank you guys so much for coming in to present. It was great doing all the orgs and I can't show favoritism, but you know, the programming events are definitely some of my favorite that are hosted here at Cornell. So, you know, I think with this transfer of money stuff, if under the assumption that the organization's budget is their budget, right? We gave a lot of increases. It's a lot of money, right? And so, like, I don't really know as if, like, yes, you're going to have to come to an agreement, right? But it's important to keep the student assembly informed. And I know we talked about the liaison. There's no guarantee that, number one, the liaison model will necessarily stick through, right, in the future. It's very hard to get people to come to multiple meetings. Although that's the goal, right, you also might not have a very involved liaison, right? You might have a liaison, you might never show up, right? So it's kind of like, you know, I don't really know. You know, I think the goal is to keep it very informed. If the money transfers are small and people want to collaborate on smaller events, yes, that $1,000 should help smooth things out in the long run. But realistically, like, you know, the massive transfers of money that are like, you know, the slope day transfers last year, like, I didn't know about that until like this year, right? And it's kind of like, yes, that was a great thing. Like, organizations stepped in to help save slope day last year, right? But I think it's very, very important to keep student assembly, everyone else informed. I know, you know, I think the range you guys are thinking of is, you know, I think anything 10K or more should, yes, that should be run by the student assembly. But in terms of that lower bar number of 1,000, whether that's a little bit higher in that range, I think that's sort of where you guys are coming from a little bit more in terms of, like, you know, to have some of these events, you might need to ship in 2-3K, right? And going through the student assembly is a lot of work, but if it's through the exec committee, right, I mean, that could be done at the exec meetings, which are held one time per week, or it could be done maybe over email, something like that, some other different voting system. But I think it's important just to keep the student assembly informed of what's going on, right? And then we keep us informed, and we can throw the stuff on the newsletter, and that sends out to the entire Cornell community, right? I know you guys are going to have a calendar, but, you know, I think it's important that the people, you know, in this room, as well as everyone in programming council, all those orgs, they're all in agreement about this.
That's time. Questions on the floor. Vice President Ting.
Hi there. Thanks for coming in. My question is, would there be any debilitating, undue, like, substantial administrative burden with this, like, appropriations recommendation? Because I think just looking at the numbers, between anything up to $10,000 is a pretty substantial amount of money. Exec committee is also very, very active. Even when we're not actively in like a meeting or a session, like, we stay in consistent communications with one another. And our VP of finance has also been very, very diligent this year. Everyone in exec has been made very, very well aware of any motions that are happening. So I just wanted some clarification on that.
Thank you for your question. I think that the bigger issues that we're anticipating is that, to, you know, transfer this money, like, at the end of the day, for these orgs, like, $1,000 may not be enough to smooth it over. And it's like this process of how much autonomy can we keep as a student programming council and as our individual orgs to, like, to constantly come up to, you know, student assembly and be like, oh, we need this. You know, obviously it's not ideal to, you know, come and ask you guys for like big sums, and we're trying to reduce that. That's the whole point of SBC. But I think it's important to acknowledge that we also want to be able to do things while keeping you informed. But I think that the choice shouldn't just be up to like one group. You know, I think this is a decision that should be made between multiple people, and that's kind of the whole point of SBC.
Yeah, that being said, I do have a bit of a question as to, I understand where you're coming from and wanting to be kept in the loop, because I think that having transparency between your organizations would be beneficial for both of us. I guess I'm just curious, like, why it has to be specifically in the form, like, why specifically $10,000, other than just the generalization that, yes, that is a lot of it, like, a lot of money. If anything, like, could we increase that ceiling a little bit? And then following up with that, just like, again, like, does it have to be a vote, or like, can we just keep you in the loop? I know the liaisons, like, that might be a difficult like system to keep up, but like, are there other ways? Just because, again, part of the SBC's like whole thing is like this autonomy and ability to work with other programming organizations and decide together collectively based on our experience and with spending for our programming orgs, how this money should be spent.
So yeah, I can help kind of answer what inspired this range of things. So we have special projects as a student assembly, and that amount of money ranges between 15K, 19K, somewhere in there for the year, right? And organizations can come apply and then we grant them some of the money. I think a few of the programming council orgs, we allocated some of the money last year to them. But in that model, right, if an organization requests something $400 or lower, me or Patrick can just approve it, right? If it's between $400 and $1,500, it has to be approved by the executive committee. They vote on it. And then if that passes, then it goes to the student assembly floor where I present it, talk about it. And then the student assembly has the ability to overturn it, I think by a simple majority, maybe two thirds, right? But they get input like that, right? In terms of the 10,000 or the upper range, above $1,500 with their total budget being, you know, 15 grand, right, for the year, that needs to be approved by the executive committee. And then it needs to be presented to the student assembly where then they vote. And then it's either some majority or two thirds, and then that gets approved, right? And so it's kind of in that similar model, except I think the range that you guys are a little concerned of is, you know, if it's 10K or over, right? It's like, student assembly should probably know about that. It's a pretty sizable amount of money, right? But if it's between 1,000 and 10,000, right? It's not like it's going to go to the student assembly floor. Like, yes, we might have to announce it, but it's the executive committee voting out, right? And so it's, you know, I feel like for the most part, if we look at the aggregate sum of program council, I don't think a lot of student assembly exec committees are ever going to be like, no, you can't transfer this fund. It's like, you know, heaven forbid, like you guys made this model just for them to shoot it down. And then in that case, the student assembly could vote to amend it. If you guys are saying, we're having all these problems with the executive committee, what's going on, right?
That's time. Representative Vice President Barry.
So my question was to like from the programming board. Thank you for your presentation. I guess I was just wondering like how often you guys transfer money and what the balance usually is. Because as I see it, like, you know, maybe we could like somehow like shift that $10,000 balance up to give you guys some more wiggle room rather than just like completely removing the stipulation.
Yeah, I can speak on this first. Just to clarify again, we are a new organization. We were founded this year. So in terms of like doing things under like this umbrella specifically, we haven't done that before. But as we kind of talked about earlier, it has been necessary for some of our orgs due to, you know, financial restraints that they've had to transfer money because they can't afford, I guess, like, for example, with Slope Day and CCC, they can't afford to bring in artists that students would want to see on campus. So we can see that there is like a clear need, like especially in terms of like trying to bring activities and programming to campus that students want to see and will actually enjoy. Like, we need more money for that. And that's kind of why we've sort of seen transfers of monies between these organizations. And that being said, the Student Programming Council model makes it easier to transfer these funds. And I do understand where you're coming from in terms of the voting. But that being said, it does make it slightly more difficult for that funding to be transferred.
To speak more on it, I agree with everything Harry said. I also think it's important to recognize how we are making sure that we're able to spend the money we're given. You know, obviously want to, you know, attempt to spend all the allocation, not have any rollover. And when we're working with such specific numbers, sometimes, you know, something ends up being more expensive than it needs to be. Or when two groups are working on putting on a concert, you know, one org may be running low and not be able to afford something else, you know. So I think that's like kind of the bigger concern of why we want to make sure that we, you know, maintain our autonomy as individual orgs, as SPC, just because I also feel like there's a distinguish between, you know, oversight versus having a direct hand in it.
So I think I would just say to this, right, obviously the student assembly, we recently passed something that would allow the transfer or like the taking back of money that's above 30% of the rollover account balance, right? So let's say, for example, one of the organizations within the programming council, let's say, for example, Convocation, right, who at the beginning of this year had an account balance that was a little bit over the yearly allocation. What's to say that the programming council couldn't say to themselves, okay, we have all these other organizations that haven't been up to 30%. Let's just transfer that money in between them to then stop the transfer back money to the student assembly to put to more capital projects and stuff like that. Right. And I think what we did, the equivalent of, is what the programming council can do with Slope Day in terms of that amount of money and taking it back. But I think that this is mainly just a protective hedge against something like that happening in the future. And it's not against anyone personally, right? When you involve money and you involve some of this stuff and the ownership over some of these orgs, it's like you have to watch out for what might come, right? I think there's valid discussion in the future if those ranges can be increased. but let's at least experiment now and see how's this working, right? Where are the bottlenecks? And we can come back and always reassess.
Other questions on the floor? Representative Jordan.
Question for VP Lorenzo. I was just wondering what the why does it need to be approved by the executive board, and why couldn't it be like maybe an email just informing them that they're transferring this money, so it could be like information flow but not necessarily like a high touch process?
I think it goes back to the example that I just sort of laid out, where if they, for example, said, hey, like, we're going to transfer X money from this org to put into this org, right? It may go into the rollover account. It may go to just spending very, very, you know, a lot of money on events at the end of the year just to whittle it down. But I think it's somewhere along those lines of, yes, they can inform us, but do we have some sort of lever potentially in the future, right, that could, you know, still embody that rollover, you know, clawback difference, right? And I think maybe I'll yield the rest of my time to Nicholas, because he looks like he has a good time.
I have a question. I just don't understand why the approval of a financial transfer is a big deal. You know, you have multiple opportunities every week. You know, executive committee meets every single week for multiple hours. Student assembly meets every single week for multiple hours. And it also feels like concerts and events are something that should be planned in advance. And I guess I don't understand like the mobility argument of having things. Like if you find out on Wednesday that you need to transfer an extra 10K before your Saturday event, you have all of Thursday to come to the student assembly meeting and get it approved.
I think the timeline is important to consider, but I also think the main concern that I have seen across a lot of student leaders, not just like SVC, is that we want to be able to, you know, maintain the autonomy of our groups. And I understand the $10,000 stipulation. It makes sense because if we're having something over $10,000, it's reasonable to expect, you know, as an org to inform student assembly about what's going on. But I think our bigger concern is between the $1,000 and $10,000 threshold, which honestly to SVC, the much smaller, much more, it can happen much more because we do a lot of collaborative events, obviously. And I guess our bigger concern right now is maintaining our ability to run the orgs to the extent we want and not have, you know, student assembly overstep in any way.
That being said, I just want to emphasize again that we are experienced planners. We are very familiar with how to spend to do what we do. And we also have amazing advisors who help us make sure that we're spending the money correctly in the best way that we can to bring in the best events, the best talent that we can. So that being said, we're just like, we maybe just want some clarification on why SA should, like, if we make the decision that we want, let's say like 30K allotted to some certain event, but that transfer, why should SA be able to say no to that, given we have the like experience and we like knowledge, I guess, to kind of like back up why we are requesting that amount?
I'll answer that because
I got an answer.
Okay.
It's because we're the ones that allocate the money. Sorry. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's like VP Finance always needs to do a very thorough job, know what's going on. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the student activity fee was bowled out for the trustees and then tasked student assembly with going in and allocating it to these organizations over time. But I feel like that's a similar thing that Patrick was going to say, but it's like, we want to bring you closer in to the student assembly, right? All of your programs and events are extremely important to the Cornell community, as well as everyone here, right? And I feel like it's a simple thing to be like, hey, maybe student assembly should have a say in the money that they are allocating to make sure that it's well spent. Versus the every 2 year transfer.
Vice President Ting.
First of all, I just wanted to say that Programming Council by far has had one of the biggest allocation chunks of the byline cycle, over triple digits. Up until this point, most appropriation committee decisions have been two digits and under, somewhere around $22 and $8. That being said, it is not unprecedented for student assembly to closely monitor where our money goes. We've done it on a micro level with a special assemblies projects fund. It's the same process as outlined in our governing documents between SA, VP Finance, Executive Board, then the Assembly at Large. And this translates very clearly in a parallel over on a macro scale. That being said, our VP of Finance has shown us time after time that regulation, like oversight, is necessary. our point here isn't to take away autonomy, but rather introduce this like regulation, right? Our presence. We're not dictating where your money goes. At that point, I believe it would be an overstep. But to my understanding, nothing from the Appropriations Committee's decision takes away your autonomy of how to spend your money, rather the means in which you can acquire this. The things that you choose, the programs and the events that you choose to put on are still up to the planner's discretion. So my question at this point is, would there be like, where's the autonomy like being taken away beyond just oversight?
I think a big part of it is what we've been used to doing. I think a lot of it is when we're making a decision, it's not just us. It's obviously all of our council, all of our, you know, members working towards it. But I think our concern of autonomy is because it almost feels like student assembly has kind of interjected themselves in our meetings, which I understand. But there's like a level of how much is, you know, how much oversight is needed. And I think it would be appreciated if we could have these open conversations rather than, you know, finding out, oh, this is going to happen, this is going to happen. I think that way it'll be, you know, more clear communication from both sides. But from like a student leader perspective, I wish there was more way to communicate and, you know, hear about the oversight, because I guess I think there's a need for, you know, but I think there's a need that you guys understand what we're doing and how we're doing it. I agree. That's why I think a lot of our finances have been very important. But I also think it does feel a little bit more like where we draw the line, I guess.
That being said, I think it's more just like the fact that as the people doing the programming, we understand that like you're not trying to like we don't think that like you're encroaching on us necessarily. It's more just like we have the context of what the event is, like the programming we'd be doing is, and more context as to why we feel would be beneficial to the community. It's more just like we're worried that like if we have this an amazing idea and given our experience we believe that it would be a great, like it would do something really good for the community, but then that kind of disagrees with you guys, you can like stop that transfer of money. And that kind of then is kind of where we're concerned about like you not allowing us to do certain programming. Does that clarify a little bit, or?
Representative Reziga, and after that, I'm going to call the question.
I motion to end debate.
That motion is in order. There's a second. Is there any dissent to any debate? What? Okay. No dissent. We will move into voting. Again, voting on an appeals process.
What?
We're voting on the appeals process. So we're in appeals process now.
Oh.
Vice President DeLorenzo.
Oh, no, it made sense.
We're voting on the appeals process now. If you vote yes, you're accepting the Vice President of Finances and the Appropriation Committee's recommendation of their current allocation. That needs 50% to pass. If you vote no, to say we're going to go into an internal process to figure out how much we should give all these organizations, it needs two thirds of no votes to go into that process. If we hit anywhere in the middle, we will caucus and then go into voting again.
Point of information. So a yes is a blanket yes for all of the orgs, and a no would mean not a blanket no for all of them, but maybe like a specific. Okay.
If you vote no on the Appropriation Committee's recommendation, then we will divide the question after that and go organization by organization. Are there other points of inquiry on the floor?
Yeah, point of information. So like if we vote no, we would have to like debate it again right now. We couldn't like table it for next meeting.
No, we'd have to debate it today. This is the most important thing on the agenda today. Point of information, DeLorenzo.
Point of information. If you are a member of the following organizations, you are not allowed to vote in that organization's vote. Class councils and senior days, senior convocation committee, Cornell Concert Commission, Cornell University Program Board, Slope Day Programming Board, Student Union Board, and the Multicultural Community Fueled Activities Board, as well as the Student Programming Council. If you're a member of any of them, you need to abstain for the conflict of interest.
This does not apply to student assembly liaisons. If you're a liaison to that organization, you're a student assembly member, not a member of that organization.
Unless
Representative Wallen.
Unless they're technically on the exec board.
If I'm holding proxy, but I'm
but the person I'm voting proxy for is not a part of an organization, can I vote?
I think we hold, if they've given you a way to vote, then you can vote that way. If they have not given you a way to vote, you cannot vote with that proxy. Does that make sense? Okay. To accept the appropriation committee's decision, can we get a roll call vote, please? If you are, have a conflict of interest, please, abstain from the vote. Just say abstain.
Amita Akpan.
Yes.
And then Mara Bakri. Proxy for Lucia Balstrary.
Abstaining for her.
Issa Tuberi.
I abstain.
Franklin Berry.
Yes.
Simone Chan.
Yes.
Rocco Lorenzo.
Abstain.
Laura Dharam.
Yes.
David Diao.
Yes.
Karis Everett.
No.
Christian Flournoy's proxy.
Abstain.
Allison Helkowski.
Yes.
Niles Height.
Yes.
Cassandra Jordan. Sion Kim.
Abstain.
Clyde Letterman's proxy.
Yes.
Flora Meng. Yash Moitra.
No.
Ezugo Ononye.
Yes.
Suraj Parikh.
Abstain.
Casey Platkins, proxy.
Abstain.
Amani Rizeka.
No.
David Suarez.
Abstained.
Benjamin Terhar. Claire Ting.
Yes.
Adam Vinson.
I'm his proxy, abstain.
Amy Wang.
Abstain.
And Patrick Keel.
Abstain.
It's a 12-4-8 vote.
12-4-8. The Appropriations Committee stands. Okay. We'll move on to the next item. Point of inquiry.
I wanted to motion.
You want
to
what?
I want a motion.
Okay. Make a motion.
I motion to suspend the rules and bring Resolution 33 to the top of the agenda.
That is an order. There's a second. Is there any dissent? Any dissent to moving Resolution 30 to the next item of business? Resolution 30, right? 33. Resolution 33 to the next item. Seeing no dissent, Resolution 33. Sponsors, please take your place at the front of the room. How much time would you like for your presentation?
5 minutes.
5 minutes on the clock. Begin okay. When you're ready.
So just before I begin, the resolution is in the box. The updated version is there. It's missing. The one that printed out is missing a bunch of stuff. So refer to the one in the box. So basically, this is resolution 33 titled Protecting Freedom of Expression, Anti-Doxing. As we all know, the threat of doxing poses substantial safety concerns, infringing upon students' abilities to freely express themselves, increasing their likelihood to be victims of targeted attacks and harassment. This resolution is intended to prompt the Cornell University administration to adopt a more proactive role in safeguarding the privacy of the students and upholding their right to freedom of expression. So essentially, as we all know, this year by Mark Topalik was marked the year of freedom of expression, year 2020 through 2024. And as we know, members of the university who take more radical or left-leaning approaches, perspectives on current events and political matters, including members of this student assembly, teaching faculty, and leaders of other student organizations, have historically faced consequences of harmful practices of doxing. Websites like the Canary Mission, who dox students, do not fact-check information and often take statements out of context, and they completely misrepresent what students and faculty are actually saying. These media sources use defaming language that are aimed at defaming the reputation of those that they're posting about. And there are a substantial number of students and faculty listed on websites like Canary Mission. The majority of students listed are members of historically marginalized communities, Black, Brown, and Muslim students. A threat and fear of being posted on doxing websites actively intimidates members of the university and threatens their ability to share their views, hindering them from actually exercising their rights for freedom of expression. And social media pages posted on these sites are posted with malicious intent, meant to expose students, decrease their opportunities of getting jobs, and potentially harming their safety. Students have lost visa access and some have been deported at other universities. So this is a very important topic.
Okay, so. Oh, yeah. So what we try to see is be there for resolve. We want to see Cornell just taking more of an active role in protecting the privacy of students on campus, especially with the freedom of expression theme year. It's really important that we're upholding this theme across different communities. And I think it's really important to really focus on the fact that the marginalized communities are being targeted the most. And so I think just like if with any critical thinking, you know that these groups already have faced barriers. So I think just adding on top of that is like really detrimental to just like safety and well-being for Cornell students. We want to see just more proactive measures being taken from the Cornell University administration, and also just a full condemnation of Canary Mission's targeted attacks on reputations and the well-being of Cornell community members. And we also want to see the Cornell University Board of Trustees consider doxing and digital harassment when updating the official student code of conduct. And we also want to see Cornell offering further support to students and faculty members whose reputations have been publicly harmed and defamed, which they have. And so this would be things like health, academic, and legal resources being put forward, and especially also just support for mental hardships that students may be experiencing. And so we just want to make sure that we continue to make Cornell a safe environment focused on dissemination of historical ideas and formation of opinions. So just upholding a lot of our pillars as a Cornell community and freedom of speech, more importantly.
Lovely. Representative Jordan. You can make an amendment. Friendly amendments are not a thing. Please use a microphone.
Yes, sorry. This isn't on the spirit of the resolution, but rather the grammar. Would it be possible to change line 20 to fix the spelling of Palestine?
Yeah, it was fixed. It just must have not updated on your computers. Maybe if you refresh the page or like exit it.
Okay.
So there's no amendment needed?
No.
Okay. The amendment's already been made.
And then, oh, sorry, one more.
Yeah, fine.
And then on the last, not the last, page 2 with the quotations. I believe you don't mean to have quotations before the ellipses.
Before what line is it?
Line 53 and 54. You mean to say, quote, as a university founded to be a place where, like, ellipses, any person, any study.
Yeah, okay.
That amendment is in order. Is there any dissent to that amendment? Seeing none, that amendment is made. Points motions on the floor. Representative Durham.
I have a few questions. Three. So doxing isn't easy to trace, especially from a group like Canary Mission, which targets universities primarily. How do you envision this recommendation is accomplished? Can I ask all three at once?
Start with one and then we'll come back.
I think as it currently stands, like there's no way for Cornell to kind of like track who's sending students information in. But I think what this resolution does, it kind of like places a no tolerance community at Cornell, zero tolerance at Cornell about doxing. Like this is a historical thing that has gone on for many years in the past. And there's nothing been said about it. There have been no repercussions. So I think this statement to begin with just kind of like has the university take a stance on doxing as something that should not be allowed here. And then we want to like, you know, leave room open for like it to further be explored in the student code of conduct and ways that Cornell can proactively prevent students from being posted on websites like these or their social media pages shared.
Also, like the current environment around like doxing students is that there's like no like fear for any type of consequences for doxing students, just like as defined by the student code of conduct. And that's why like one of our recommendations or like resolutions is to like have like the Board of Trustees consider doxing and digital harassment as like a student code of conduct violation when they're updating the student code of conduct.
Any other points before going back to Representative Durham? Representative Height.
I just had like a quick question because like doxing is like a really big issue here. I was wondering like the resolution as a whole, at least like could we possibly like reword it in a way that reflects like the entire student body rather than like I guess a group, since I guess that's our job, I guess as a student assembly, politics aside, would that be possible?
I think that this would definitely be applied to all students. It's not like we're just trying to protect one certain group, but I do think in this resolution, we made it a point to mention that the students on this website are mostly students from marginalized backgrounds already, but we're not trying to say like those, they're the only ones worthy of protection.
Yeah. So as you like saw, like there, like the, any mention of like Canary Mission, is only mentioned in the whereas clauses just because we felt it necessary to provide a context of what is going on in the current climate. Like years from now, when people are looking back on this resolution and take like seeing like what stance Cornell is taking on doxing, I think it's very important to consider what was going on in the moment and how that influenced what how the resolution was written.
Vice President Ting.
I just want to take a second and express my support for this resolution. Currently, when we look at current code of conduct or university responses to doxing, it's largely reactive. If you've noticed the threat of doxing looming around in recent times, there's also been a lack of university support. I think the only thing I've received personally as a member of executive board is an email forwarded thanks to the Office of Assemblies regarding resources from the library about how to prevent doxing. And the most that does is just tell you to lock down your accounts and put your social media profiles on private. In my opinion, I don't think that's enough. So I personally will be supporting this resolution because it promotes a proactive rather than a reactive approach to deter doxing on this campus.
Yeah. And just to add for like the new members who are underclassmen, like this assembly itself has had a huge, like a crazy history of like doxing. Like former presidents, members of the assembly have received death threats. Their information has been posted online. Like this is a serious issue and nothing has been done about it. So I think it's time that, you know, we start making steps to like, we stand and we represent our constituencies and we're supposed to be able to defend their voices when they're being silenced. And that is our job here today. So in support of that, supporting this resolution would be the only way to do that.
Representative, I can't read your last name from here. I'm sorry. Mang. Representative Mang.
My question is there any specific examples about how, like, or what kind of action the university can take to prevent the doxing? Like, because so far from what I have heard, I would say, like, it's still a kind of abstract or, like, not really practical actions that we can know, like, what the university can do aside from, like, taking a stand.
Yeah, I think, like, one of our, like, resolutions is also for like the university to like provide resources including like health, academic, and legal resources for students who have like faced like mental hardships relating to like the defamation, their defamation of like character online due to doxing, and also like leaking like private information. Like when students are receiving death threats, like
this university is like a multi-billion dollar institution. They have the resources to be able to help these students, and they choose not to.
I think also we included that there will be legal resources being put forward to support students. It says it to experience students experiencing mental hardships, but also like generally this is a call for Cornell to also just take more like more concrete action in the form of like maybe like legal support to students, and then possibly also like putting resources forward to get the students off of the sites. But that just like that's a future step.
And also one of the biggest things is that if doxing is added to student code of conduct, then there's a precedent set. There's a precedent set that students cannot just leak other student information with malicious intent. I feel like that's really important. So also, it's also on the onus of the university to look into ways they could stop doxing as well.
Director Bangura.
Yeah, thank you so much for this resolution. My question is more so geared towards specific aspects of the university you guys would like to call to action, kind of referencing some recent history. When we passed Resolution 24, which was condemning sexual assault, one of the things that made it effective was being able to name Title IX itself by name, which led them to act and collaborate with us way before Martha Pollack officially accepted that resolution. So I guess two-part question, have you guys considered which specific departments or administrators you would like to respond to this? And would it be possible to amend to add those into the proper, be it further resolved, clauses?
So I think like CAPS, the Office of Student Advocate, and so like CAPS, like mental health resources, student advocate, like just protecting you in your everyday life. Perhaps CUPD, like inquiring if people, like making sure that students are safe and like that they're not like facing any like bodily like harm in any specific moment. Not sure what to do about the legal. Like if doxing and like digital harassment is added to the student code of conduct, like the student judicial board, should be involved, and like students who dox other students should like face like repercussions for their actions as well.
Representative Courtney.
Hi. First of all, like super well written resolution. I really like the mission that you guys are doing. I just want to start by saying that I'm given the fact that Cornell already provides CAPS, we have a student advocate. Students know if I'm under threat, call CUPD, that these resources are being provided. I'm curious what differs from those resources that your resolution seeks to provide, I guess?
Yeah, I think that, well, just off the top of my head, I think that in general with the previous resolution that was, it wasn't put forward, but in the DEI committee previously, just like acknowledging Palestinian death, we had tried to, get that through. But it's on the same note of like students who are being put on these sites may be voicing an opinion or like a stance that may not align with everybody. But the fact that the Cornell administration did kind of take a stance on this by vocally supporting one group and not really like trying to uplift or support another, I think that just kind of sends a message to these students that they're not going to be supported or that they're right, that they won't be protected. So I think that just having like a principle, like a precedent, like in the thing that says, if you dox somebody, then you could face consequences through the code of conduct. I think that's just like setting a precedent that you are protected as a student and prevents it from happening.
And also just to add, like, honestly, like most students are not aware of the resources available to them. Like I really didn't know what the Office of the Student Advocate was until I joined the Student Assembly. So I think like having someone that, like if a student like submits a port, if they're like speaking to someone and they feel like a certain way about being doxxed, like they're scared, like they know like what resources to reach out to, as well as like CAPS, like it's very difficult to get a counselor, like, you know, they're super backed up. So ensuring that there's people actively waiting to work with these students, and also to add, like CUPD doing a wellness check, like just being that, like, you know, often like what we've seen historically, like students that are being doxxed come from historically marginalized groups, like brown and Muslim students who may not necessarily have like a good relationship with the police. Like they don't necessarily see the police as a system that's going to be able to support them.
So like if like they get a phone call, like, oh, like, you know, I'm just doing a wellness check, like just saying that, like, we're on your side. Like if you feel any type, if you're not feeling safe, if you're feeling at harm's way, like we'll reach out to you, like let us know. And, you know, like this is a safe space, someone that you can come, like, you know, come to if you're having a hard time.
It's also important to recognize like that the university's like current like stance whenever any student like reaches out to them about being doxxed is like, oh, like keep your accounts private, like that it, they kind of like blame the student, and so they don't offer any type of support or like resources to them like when they are doxxed and they do ask for help. So
motion to extend meeting by 10 minutes.
That motion is in order. Is there a second?
Second.
Any dissent? Seeing none, meeting is extended by 10 minutes. Representative Pite, 30-second speaking time.
Okay, so like really
gavel bang at 15 seconds.
Okay, so really quickly, the whole like the resolution itself is sound. I just think like you mentioned earlier, like when people like reference this, like in the future, I still think like probably you should refrain from like, I guess, radical or left leaning perspective, like just like reword it in general. Cause I feel like if someone does look at it, it does look like, okay. Yeah. So it does look like a certain group of people, I guess historically not so much, but like in this context, it does look like a certain group of people are being catered over another. And like our job as student assemblies to represent all students, regardless of political ideology. So like that was like my only note.
Rather than striking that, I'd rather add a line, say, like, I would like to keep the line of like radical or left leaning approaches. We can add to that or just any other like take or something.
Also to add that therefore be resolved is inclusive of all students. So I feel like we could keep that because after looking at what's happening now, it is a lot of radical left leaning students that are being targeted. So I think that's important to keep.
Representative
Tarar. Can you speak into the microphone? Sorry.
My apologies. You mentioned that you had a meeting with OSCCS, and I was just wondering what they said when you talked to them. Oh, the Office of Student Conduct.
Community. Oh, we did not meet with them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but we do know that, us just, like, writing a resolution saying that, like, we want to update the Student Code of Conduct, like, we don't really have purview over there. So what it is, like the Board of Trustees, they meet every couple of years to update the Student Code of Conduct. So like the last one, I think, was posted like a couple years ago. So I know that the time stamp is coming up on that. So they will be reviewing it soon. So that was the point of that clause.
Vice President Parikh.
Yeah, I just want to agree with what Representative Hyde said about like maybe making this resolution a little bit more general, even from like a practical standpoint. I think, given how sensitive the topic is, I think the university administration and Martha would be more likely to approve this and really like get behind it if it was something that could be broadly applied to protecting the entire Cornell community. And I think that would send a lot more of a powerful message to the people who are trying to, you know, dox students for having non-standard viewpoints, that the university administration is behind the students and behind free expression.
Just as a point of information, Martha does not have to approve this. It's just a statement from the student assembly.
Is there a specific amendment that people would like to make, like, so we could adopt it?
Also, like, I just wanted to reiterate that, like, the radical or left-leaning, like, line is in the whereas statements, and that's just, like, to provide, like, historical context, because that's the historical context. Like, that's just, like, the reality of, like, what's happened in the past.
Representative Duran.
Firstly, I would argue that standpoint more on students with non-traditional views is better. But a question specific to word choice is on lines 30 and 31. You exclude Jews from historically marginalized groups, even as members of groups like Jewish Voices for Peace are included on those docs on Carrie Mission. Can you expand on or explain that? And can you expand on who had given input on this resolution's wording? Because those who co-sign represent fairly similar groups. And as a member of the Muslim and Christian community myself, I understand limits of my perspective, and I want to know more about the limits of this document.
I didn't hear anything you said.
I yield Representative Duran more time to say it again.
You exclude Jews from historically marginalized groups, even as members of groups like Jewish Voices for Peace are included in those docs on Canary Mission.
I'm a. Can you expand on that? We can amend that. Add that. Muslim and Jewish students. Jewish and Muslim students, we can add that.
Okay. And then also, can you just generally expand on who has given input on this resolution wording? Because those who co-signed represent fairly similar groups, and as a member of the Muslim and Christian community myself, I understand the limits on my perspective, and I just want to know the limits on this of this document.
Okay, so I reached out to the like basically like members of the e-board on these various organizations, and they voted as an executive board. And so thus they are community sponsored.
As undergraduate representative to University Assembly, I have reached out to some students as well, speak to students on campus. Not like it wasn't as expansive as ISSUs, but there was a lot of feelings that, yeah, doxing is a problem on campus.
Representative Moitra.
My question is more regarding the concern that doxing is used as a method of community safety amongst especially people who are feeling under threat right now, where we know that historically communities have used the idea of being able to record a perpetrator as an idea of keeping themselves safe, whether it be with regard to police officers or otherwise. And with what happened yesterday at Columbia and what happened at Columbia previously as well, and what could possibly happen here in the future, a lot of students that feel unsafe right now feel like their phones are the only thing that are protecting them from such violence, right? Yesterday at the protests at... May I have 50, some more
you have 15 seconds. It's halfway.
Yesterday at the rally, there was a Jewish student that was recording the protest because she felt unsafe while she was in the protest, and she was then harassed by people who were protesting. So how do you mitigate this? Because you're taking away a method of community safety, which I agree with, that it should be taken away because it harms other students. How do you reckon with that? And how do you make people feel more safe when you take away the right to record things?
All right. So there's clearly a difference between like walking by and you feel unsafe and taking a video of someone, then like reported, then taking that video and reporting it to a national website that historically, like, you know, is known for doxing and like spreading students' information on a national level that can then cause harm to them. Like, the point of this resolution is not to infringe on people's rights of recording anyone that they may feel safe around. We affirm that as a right of people, especially like coming from marginalized communities, like you should have the power to take a picture or and then be able to like report it to a police officer or show it to like someone that can help you out. But like, we don't agree with people then having that posted to like doxing websites or being sent to like outside forces of Cornell that could harm those students.
There's a clear difference between like taking a video of someone who you feel is like threatening your harm and then reporting that to the police because you feel a threat to your safety, than posting like their personal information and like videos of their political views on like a doxing website that's going to like expose them and like to like national threat.
Need to follow up?
No. Representative Everett.
I also just wanted to call someone's attention that like this isn't just an issue like with the Canary Project. Like, people are getting doxxed on Twitter, they're getting doxxed on Instagram, like any social media platform that you can post a public forum, people are getting doxxed on there and they're getting harassed. Like, doxxing isn't just your address, it's any personal information that you do not want out to like millions of people. And they're receiving hateful messages. If you're new to the assembly, there are members on this assembly who have been doxxed before, and it's not fun. It's not like a joke or something that's like, oh, it's just messages. Like, I'm sure no one on this assembly would want to go onto their social media page and see hundreds of messages, regardless of what they've said, and people like threatening their life, telling them horrible things, even if they're invisible people. That threatens your sense of security.
Yeah, I just want to...
That's okay, yeah. 45. I'm going to give you 45 seconds to respond.
Yeah, I just want to echo what Kara just said. Students are being doxxed on Instagram, Canary Mission, LinkedIn, SideChat, Instagram, Twitter. Like, and then I've known many students who are being harassed, mental health, scared to go to class, scared to do protests, scared to speak up, scared to have their freedom of expression. This whole theme of the school is supposed to be freedom of expression, but then people's freedom of expression is being hindered because they're being doxxed. So I think just overall, student assembly needs to take a stance. Martha Public needs to take a stance. You can't just willy-nilly have, what's it called, freedom of expression for the school year without protecting students' free speech. So I think this is a great step forward.
Motion in place.
Motion on the floor.
Motion to end debate and move into voting for this.
That assembly. Motion is in order. Is there a second on the floor? Is there any dissent to moving into debate or closing debate? Excuse me. There's dissent. We will now move into voting. All of those in favor of closing debate, please raise your placards now. What'd you say? No, no proxies first. We'll do
point
proxies.
Of information.
Point of information.
Like, for people that so right now we're voting to close debate on this resolution, and then we'll move into voting. So this is purely to like, we're closing debate. So that's
that is correct. That is correct. All those in favor of closing your closing debate, please raise your cards now. Raise them high, please. All those against. All those for holding proxies. All those against holding proxies. That fails. It's a 2/3 vote to end debate. We are still in debate. Executive Vice President Ting.
So I want to touch on what the practice of this resolution looks like. Once this resolution saying, assuming it does pass, right, and the conversations with the student code of conduct starts happening, right, let's look at an ideal world where, you know, like the definition of doxing is expanded. When that is implemented, it is not purely just for like Black, Brown, or Muslim students as emphasized in this resolution. Just because this resolution emphasized marginalized communities who have felt victimized in recent times doesn't mean that the practice and application of this resolution is exclusive. At the end of the day, this is something we should all be very concerned about and be promoting, especially as members of the student assembly being prone to being doxxed. Look up disarming CUPD and check out all the names of student assembly members, executive officers, presidents who have been doxxed in the past. Because this is something that concerns every single one of our safeties.
45 seconds to respond. Gavel Banga, 15 seconds.
So thank you for that, Vice President Clear. I would just like to also add, like, we all know it's the year of freedom of expression. Though this resolution has tones that are leaning towards, like, people of marginalized communities, like, historically, we know what kind of voices are being silenced. It's people that come from Black, Brown, Muslim, Jewish communities, people who are the minorities. And that, so, and we just feel like this resolution would supplement their freedom, their right to freedom of expression. We already know that there's people that they're going to be able to speak and say whatever they want, without any implications, without any consequences, no matter what. So this resolution just aims to like raise the playing ground and make it more even.
I also want to emphasize that like there is no like current like university stance on like doxing. There is there's no way to like protect students who have been doxed. So like to vote yes for this resolution would mean to like implement like the first kind of like legislation or recommendation for the university to actually protect students from doxing.
Thank you. I just have a quick question. Why wasn't OSCCS contacted? Like, is there a specific reason why you guys didn't reach out to OSCCS?
The OCSS, you're talking about the student conduct office, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't reach out to them. We just were informed of the rules and are trying to recommend something to them.
Yeah, because like they don't have the rule right now and they should have the rule. So it wasn't much to talk to them about.
I just didn't hear you. Could you say that one more time?
I said they don't have the rule right now. That was the biggest thing for us to realize. And that's why we had never reached out to them, because the main point is just to put it onto the table and have it be on the university or student level. But could you hear me?
I think, as mentioned before, too, there's been a lack of support for certain groups. I think we can all agree that. I don't know how y'all felt about the resolution from a while ago from the DEI committee that I mentioned earlier, but like there has been a stance that administration has taken. So we're just trying to help them help them represent all the students and not just certain groups. It's kind of like to help them balance it. We're just helping admin. We're part of admin. I think we have to recognize that. So we're just helping them.
Motion to extend the time by 10 minutes.
That motion is in order. Is there a second?
Second.
Any dissent? Seeing no dissent, 10 minutes extended on the clock. I just have one more follow-up question and then I will get to everybody else. So section L of the student code of conduct talks about invasion of privacy and misappropriation of property rights, including videotaping, photographing, audio taping, or otherwise making any video, picture, or sound recording, or to appropriate, distribute, share, or use someone's likeness, identify the personal data.
I'm familiar with the section.
What?
So I'm familiar with the section. Okay. So it was previously in a draft of the resolution. We decided to remove it just because, like, you know, misappropriating someone's picture, like, that's not really what's happening with doxing. Rather, it's like people's social media pages being shared. Like, all of this information, like, it's already found online. So our thing is like people's social media pages being brought under the so I feel like student code of conduct, like, you know, like they wouldn't really like consider doxing underneath those stipulations. So what this resolution aims to do is like the sharing of someone's social media page or like any social media pages, Instagram, Twitter, with malicious intent and putting like bringing attention to their page on like a national level, like outside of the Cornell community.
It's not just social media, it's also people's Instagram. I mean, it's people's phone numbers, addresses, emails, classrooms.
And information, like this is what Jamal was saying, like information that's only available to you because you're in the same community as these people. So I think it's really important to recognize that like we all are in community with each other, and there's certain information that's made available to you as sharing a as being another member in that person's community. So it's on Cornell to protect that entire community.
Yeah. Representative Courtney.
Yes, I'm a non-voting member. I'm fully in support of all of this resolution. I question the realistic nature of line 61 and 62, where you say that you ask the Board of Trustees to consider implementing this in the Student Code of Conduct, specifically because of how the Student Code of Conduct matters are investigated. And given the fact that the nature of doxing is it's frequently anonymous, I question the practicality of that part of this resolution.
I just want to first say that people who have been active in going to sit-ins or even protests that have been happening on campus have seen people taking pictures and have taken pictures back of these people taking pictures. So I think that even if we can't get to like the actual root of the person who like put this person on Canary Mission or whatever site or Twitter or whatever the social media is, I think that it's still setting up like some sort of investigational process that can be put forward.
And even if also, it's hard to find out who it is, it's on the Cornell community or it's on the Cornell administration to invest resources in figuring that out.
Also, like, just like reiterate what Mara said, like, sometimes you do see, like, who is taking videos and recording you. And like, sometimes people are like brazen and they post it on their Twitter and they say, oh, look at this person and tag their social media and stuff like that. And so like, that should be like considered doxing and stuff like that, you know?
That's time. Representative Dio.
Point of information. So within lines 58 to 60 and 67 to 72 of the resolution part, like the further resolve, both of these sections talk about specific statements that you want the university to make in regards to the current situation. In line with what Vice President Ting said about proactive versus reactive responses, do you feel the inclusion of both of these sections is necessary to the spirit of the resolution?
Yeah, because Cornell University is very, very adamant. They have signs everywhere talking about their freedom of expression. So I think them having condemning doxing and also having a statement reaffirming that freedom of expression should not just be limited to expression that's going to make Cornell money. So it's really important to have this proactive stance.
Just to
clarify, I think like both can be true at the same time. You know, like right now on this campus, like there's an environment where students feel like are like afraid to voice their opinions because they feel threatened that they're going to be doxxed by members of the community, and like Cornell should make a statement on that. But also like this, like resolution itself will stand like past like now and will help protect students in the future as well.
Representative Everett, 45 seconds.
5 seconds, sorry. I also want to point out that this resolution also seeks to have like an acknowledgement from the university. So if they don't do anything about the doxing, they need to make it clear to this student body that their theme is not true to what they actually say. So if their stance is going to be that they cannot protect us against doxing, then they need to make it clear that their theme of freedom of expression is not actually valid and that there are limitations and they can't go around passing out t-shirts, passing out stickers, you know, giving us mugs to drink out of and coaxing us into these little comfortable, cute little bubbles when there's no actual agency behind what they're saying. So I think either way, like this is very beneficial because it'll ensure that the university at least looks its student body in the face and says, freedom of expression, except if you say something we don't like.
With that in mind, I move to divide the question into two sections in regards to the resolution, the previous aforementioned sections to be included in a separate resolution regarding the university's stance on freedom of expression as it relates to the current situation, and the rest of the resolution in regards to putting doxing in kind of like the student code of conduct as a separate part of the resolution.
Could you use line numbers in your motion, please?
Yeah. So the line numbers would be for lines 58 through 60 and 67 through 72 to be considered as a separate resolution in regards to the university's stance on freedom of expression on campus.
Could you explain why?
Yeah. So basically, as Representative Everett also mentioned, Cornell University kind of has two choices here, right? It can either take a hardline stance on doxing from a very legal perspective, or not legal perspective, from the perspective of the rules, or it can make statements saying that, well, there are exceptions to the freedom of expression being here, for example. And especially in regards to 58 through 60 on Canary Mission, this is very current to what's going on right now. It may not be applicable in future instances, so I don't know if it would benefit the rest of the resolution to include a specific condemnation of an organization that is sharing information, but it's not the one that's collecting information. It's not related to students. It's not the...
These are two...
So the motion on the floor is to divide the question, which again means we split the resolution between... So the first is 58, lines 58 through 60, and 67 through 72. And then the second resolution is the rest. We will vote on those separately, but we are in discussion about that right now. Motion's on the floor. The discussion is about dividing the question.
The discussion is about the amendment?
Yes.
Okay, so I don't think that amendment should be made because, like, it is an intertwined issue. Like, you can't just separate it. Like, it could stand together. Like, just because, like, this resolution is, like, also calling on Cornell to react to, like, the current environment on campus does not mean it can't still be, like, still can't include aspects of the resolution that will be, like, applicable to the future.
Additionally, you can't separate doxing from freedom of expression. If it's infringing on the rights of people's, of the ability of students to be able to exercise freedom of expression, then I don't really see that why this resolution should be moved. Kind of like to explain what we were going with the final be it finally resolved clause. It was just like, with this resolution, Martha Pollack needs to kind of like reaffirm what she meant by freedom of expression. So what are the limitations of freedom of expression? Because we all know you can say whatever you want, but like there are consequences. And in no point in any of her past statements, which we have linked below, did she mention any of those consequences.
How will she be protecting students who are enacting their rights of freedom of expression? She needs to like clarify that if like she's not protecting anybody from like just like being threatened from like voicing their political opinion, she should say that.
So
you don't have time to respond to that. Representative or Vice President Ting.
So I had the opportunity to speak to the Vice President of External Communications at the university level, Joel Molina. And one thing that we spoke about at this assembly's leadership breakfast is how doxing has effectively created a chilling effect on freedom of expression, meaning students, faculty, and Cornell community members alike are now afraid to share their opinions. You can hound the logistics of what's technically considered doxing down to the letter if you want, but I think what's indisputable is that members at every level, again, students, faculty, and even the Vice President of External Communications, right? Like we've spoken about how this creates a chilling effect, effectively clashing against the freedom of expression theme here.
Representative, do you have time to respond?
Yeah. So what I mean in regards to that is we're all talking about the theme of freedom of expression, but that is just a theme year that is going on for this year at Cornell University.
Wait, could you repeat that? Which is
so in the resolution, at least as it stated, there's lines 52 through 57 look at Cornell's core values of community of belonging. And then 467 through 72, it looks at a statement put out reaffirming freedom of expression theme year supporting students' ability to express opinions.
First, before we respond, can we motion?
Okay, hold on 1 second. So David is the speaker. You can yield your time after you're done if you would like them to respond.
Got it. I yield my time.
Also, can we motion to extend the time by 10 minutes for this?
Yes, there's a motion on the floor to extend by 10 minutes.
Second.
Is there any dissent? Dissent on the floor. We will now vote on extending the time. All those in favor of extending the time, please raise your placards now. All those opposed? That clearly passes. All right, 30 seconds to respond to David's point, please.
Okay, so in the bit, therefore be resolved, we talk about one Cornell to take a stance against doxing. Then we say that Cornell needs to affirm that students are not being attacked for being doxed. Then we say that Cornell condemns doxing.
Sorry,
then we say Cornell makes doxing against the rules.
No, you don't.
And then we say that students are protected for being doxing. Then we tie it back to Cornell's freedom of expression. So I think it's all is relevant, seeing this is protecting freedom of expression, doxing. So I think it's all still in the same thing as they all, there's a clear thread between each further be resolved.
Also, like the resolution starts off with our first whereas clause talking about how this year's like freedom of expression.
And also with the year being freedom of expression, it does not exist in a vacuum. With this year being freedom of expression, like that clearly creates a culture that Martha wants to change. President Pollack wants to change on his campus. So if she wants the culture on his campus to be freedom of expression, she started off with this theme year, then we need to uphold freedom of expression in the years to come.
Okay. Representative Everett.
Motion and debate.
Motion and debate second.
Second.
Motion and debate. We're ending debate on dividing the question. There's a second on the floor for ending debate on dividing the question. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we will move to vote on the amendment to divide the question. The question at hand is lines 58 to 60 and 67 to 72 as the first part of the resolution. These will be passed separately if they both pass, if this passes. If it does not pass, we will consider the entire resolution as it stands. 58 to 60, 67 to 72 as a separate question from the rest. All those in favor of dividing the question, please raise your placards now. All those opposed? That clearly fails. We will now be back into discussing the entire resolution.
Motion to end debate.
There's a motion on the floor to end debate. There's a second. Is there dissent? There's dissent. Please raise your placards if you'd like to end debate. All those opposed? All those for holding proxies. All those opposed holding proxies. That passes. This is no longer in debate. We will now move into voting on this resolution. Is there a point on the floor? You can make that motion if you would like. Okay.
The motion?
To table the resolution until the next meeting.
Dissent.
There's dissent. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
There's a second. We will now move into voting. The motion on the floor is to table this resolution until next meeting. All those in favor, please raise your placards now. All those opposed? All those for holding proxies? All those opposed? This resolution, that clearly fails. The question at hand is voting on the current resolution as it stands. All those for this resolution, passing this resolution, please raise your placards now. All those opposed? All those for holding proxies. All those opposed holding proxies. The count is 14-3. This resolution does pass. We still have items left on the agenda. Alison is no longer here, so we will not do that today. Resolution 32, amending student assembly charter and allyship without... Oh, yes, sorry. Resolution 30, removing median grades.
That is my resolution, but it is 7, and y'all probably want to leave. I do want you to read the resolution, think about it, talk to your friends. If you're a freshman, think about having an A- compared to an A in the class and getting subject and being like put against that for that. But yeah, we could, a motion to end the meeting by unanimous consent.
I would have dissent to that just because I want to do appointments of our new Appropriations Committee members. I move by unanimous consent that we suspend the rules and move the appointments calendar to our current agenda status.
Second.
There's a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, the appointments to appropriations is Sion Kim, Zora Duram, Divya, and David. David Dio. Is there any dissent to any of those appointments? Seeing none, so ordered. Is there a motion on the floor to do anything? Oh. Academic policy, Thomas McFarland, Constance Newell, Claire Templeman, Amita Akpan, Lakey Tang, and Kevin Zhang. And dissent. Seeing none is so ordered. Are there any motions on the floor?
Motion to end the meeting by unanimous consent.
Second.
The motion on the floor is to adjourn the meeting. There is a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, this meeting is adjourned at 6:56 p.m. on Thursday, October 26th. Everything will be added to the old business calendar next meeting.